You are listening to the Dan Patrick Show on Fox Sports Radio.
The Cowboys and Mike McCarthy.
Well, look, I think if you pop in the tape and you look at the effort and the confusion and guys playing out of alignment, particularly on defense, you start scratching your head and saying, where has been the drop off? Because for the most part, we're seeing very similar personnel from last year. Now, look, I want to cushion that by saying they had two of their starting corners on IR. They lost Gerald McCoy early in the season. DeMarcus Lawrence has seemingly disappeared from this defensive line. You had your two Mike linebackers, Sean Lee and Leighton Van Der Esch, dealing with injuries. So I'll have those allowances, but it seemed like there was frustration, particularly from Jalen Smith early in the season when he's calling out this defense and saying perhaps they could simplify the playbook. And Dan, I know you've been doing this a lot longer than I have, but when you typically see a new coaching staff come in, it's a little shocking that early to hear a player question the direction or the playbook of a new staff. It just felt disrespectful to me. So I've been digging in a little bit. And as Mike alluded, you know, we started the season with, you know, they want to handle things internally. And for the most part, players haven't been getting back to reporters. We haven't really been able to get a sense of, are they buying into things? But if you just look at the tape, clearly they're not. I mean, Everson Griffin a couple of weeks ago even said he had abandoned his three-point stance. So this is guys, it seems like, giving up. And Mike McCarthy had even insinuated, well, it feels like guys are improvising a little bit. They need to just buy into this defense. So he sort of told you what I was beginning to find out. But I think what was concerning was the spirit of it. In other words, this coaching staff doesn't know how to teach. They can't adjust on the fly. They're just not good. And when you hear those sort of things, that's concerning that you're six games in. I get the frustration. You've got 10 guys on IR. Then yesterday, Mike McCarthy tells us the backup left tackle to Tyron Smith had to go have minor surgery. Now I'm told that's going to be about 1 to 2 weeks. So that one hopefully won't be as severe. But I mean, you are down to the bottom of the barrel as it relates to this offensive line. And again, 10 guys ahead of that have been on IR starters. So there have been a lot of unique challenges for the staff. But I think when you start losing the buy-in and there's a give up, you can't overcome that. You can lose guys to injuries, but to lose this many guys this early in the season to the process, something that we knocked Jason Garrett for, and Jason never got too high, never got too low, he never got reactive, and he certainly didn't. This was another thing that stood out to me, Dan. It was a lengthy interview with them, and I appreciate Mike McCarthy answering the questions. He certainly gives his full answer, something that we didn't get necessarily from the old regime, but when he admitted to me that he simplified the playbook after the second week, when he was telling us we're not going to be a one call defense, we believe in this personnel, I just found myself going, well, what is it? Are you guys staying the course? Are you being reactive? This is a team that's used to a coaching staff that didn't get too higher, didn't get too low. It's just, we're going to play our game. But then it sounds like you are being reactive. So I was a little confused by that yesterday.
How many sources did you have? They were anonymous. Can you tell me how many?
I want to be careful, Dan, because as you know, and I don't want to specify what sides of the ball or where this frustration lies. I would say that it's permeated throughout the locker room. We'll leave it there. But I know that with the new coaching regime, it could lead to guys not being here next year, punished. We saw it in the past. Guys like Alan Hearns have gone on the record and you know, been frustrated about not getting the ball as it related to the receiving core, and then the ball didn't come to him. So I want to be very careful. I think it's also important to distinguish there are some egos on this team. Previous coaching staffs have talked about there would be a standard of coaching that would be set by Jason Garrett. Some coaches would try to implement that. And then some of these players would, in some cases, go over the head. And it was, you know, go to the principal's office and they would sort of back the player. And that can be frustrating. So there are, I think there's a couple of unique challenges that Mike McCarthy is dealing with. One, the condensed training camp. B, you're bringing in all these new coaches. You don't have the personnel you signed up for. And line item number one, you're starting quarterback. And I think it's hard to develop relationships with these guys as men virtually. And then when you don't really have time to sort of coddle these guys in your office that you typically would at a training camp or be able to take these guys to dinner when you've just got to focus on the season. So I also want to position this as saying, maybe Mike doesn't have enough of his guys still in that locker room, and that could change. So I think it's very important to be careful about what I say here and how we could connect the dots.
Jerry Jones is loyal to a fault. how loyal will he be with Mike McCarthy?
I think the leash is long with Mike. I don't think the leash is long for Mike Nolan. If you talk to a lot of people in this league who've worked with Mike, the feedback is great guy, shouldn't be a defensive coordinator. A couple of people said they can't understand why the Cowboys didn't see that. Now, if you know Mike McCarthy and Mike Nolan's history, it makes sense. They worked together, obviously, in San Francisco. But if you go back and you look at that 2005 team, we're trending very much in the same direction here. So while you had Jerry say, I'm okay with Mike yesterday, and you've got Mike giving him the vote of confidence and saying that this is the defense they want, this is the direction they want to go, you could see some changes there. I've also heard that Dak Prescott has done a really good job of masking perhaps some of the deficiencies of Kellen Moore in his young career as an offensive coordinator. Does Mike start taking over the playbook at some point? It certainly gives him an out. In other words, after this season, you could say, well, you guys wanted Kellen Moore here. We let him call the plays. It didn't work. I'm going to take some more control after the season. So I think you've got to give Mike a chance. At least what he's saying to us is he's saying he's got an open door policy. I did NFL Network yesterday, and James Jones, of course, played under Mike. That was James's feedback, that this is a coach that you can talk to. Maybe, again, because of the condensed season and not getting that opportunity to really gel with this new staff, players just haven't felt like they could. And given the timetable and the speed of this season, you haven't been able to fill that out.
Also, you look at the NFC East, and you can win the NFC East. You can go to the playoffs and still have a bad year and still make it to the playoffs. But you also look at everybody else, and you can play subpar and get into the postseason. So it's really hard to assess how the Cowboys are. Hey, we made it to the playoffs. Yeah, but you were 7-9. Or we didn't make it to the playoffs, and you know the Eagles ended up. We had all these injuries. Like I don't know how you're going to give a grade to Mike McCarthy at the end of this first year. And I think that'll be a real challenge for Jerry, because this defense, I think, is going to get better. We can't get worse, right? But I think it gets better. I just don't know if the offense gets better. Because Zeke Elliott, I hated that second contract that he got. Amari Cooper, I don't want him for $10 million, let alone $100 million. And offensive line is a disaster. I got Andy Dalton as my quarterback. Like, I don't know how you give out grades when this is all said and done.
I think it's tough given the injuries. And look, injuries are never an excuse. It's the next man up. But there's not a lot of next men up when we start looking at depth. You know, I talked about the season. It was sort of an embarrassment of riches when we looked at they got CeeDee Lamb in the draft. And, you know, they were able to, get Andy Dalton because of COVID and what a backup he was. This is a bona fide starter in the league. He's taken his team to the playoffs. And then you look at the defensive line, you said, look at Gerald McCoy, and you've got Everson Griffin and Aldon Smith. The reports are coming back strong on him. And now you look at this team and it's just an embarrassment. And I think everybody is just fairly shell-shocked. And I think you're seeing fatigue and frustration. What I didn't see under the Jason Garrett regime was the lack of buy-in that I'm hearing. And I think that's what is probably the most concerning, not only to Jerry Jones and Steven at this point and the players, but probably to Mike. And Mike even conceded that yesterday. He's had a lot of sleepless nights because they're not improving in any areas right now. And so I appreciate him taking ownership. I appreciate him saying you've got to be careful about calling out professional football players. I appreciate him saying you've got to handle this as men. And so to the outside, it does seem like the sky is falling. I think the Cowboys just need to get past this year. And I think given some time to gel, I think Mike is the type of guy you want there. I always say this is a unique position. I went to the University of Texas, Dan, and you know, we're looking at what's going on with Tom Herman down there. You have to be not only a coach, but a diplomat and a politician and an amazing marketer for that position. It expects so much more than what he is expecting in Green Bay. In fact, I kind of chuckle when I think about the conversation I had Mike in the offseason. It had to do with, without giving away too much, it had to do with something that he did not consider was a big story, and it certainly was. And I said to him, if the backup quarterback stubs his toe, that's a story in Dallas. Yeah. And so I think he's learning that, and I think his staff is learning that. Things are just magnified with the star on the helmet.
Is Matthew McConaughey a professor at your alma mater?
He's the Minister of Culture, Dan. The MOC on campus.
He's the big MOC on campus.
Exactly.
What is Minister of Culture?
You know, I think he's the, you know, the hype man. He makes Texas cool. He's a professor. I'd love to have continuing education and get in one of those classes. I used to work for Longhorn Network and got to do a couple of interviews with him on the sidelines. And, you know, he would come up here and do stuff with the Rangers. And he's a lovely guy. I mean, the guy is as charismatic off camera as he is on camera. But Texas has certainly needed him in recent years to give them something to be excited about.
We interviewed him, I think, the Fiesta Bowl. And he was on the sidelines. And like, he's so approachable. But he's so into the game. Like, don't bother me during the game. And I remember talking to him. And you just feel like a movie's going to break out. When you're around him, it feels like it's like he's in character. Rah, rah, rah. And then he'll just talk to you a little bit. And you go, oh, how's that Sports Center? You like that? And I could be like, yeah. I'd be like, hey, is there any, who is Goldie Hawn's daughter is going to come out here? What's her name? Kate Hudson. She's going to come out and embrace him, and we're in a movie scene here or something. But
you do expect him to break character at some point, and he doesn't. I was actually in college in 99 during the Bongo incident. So, of course, he was just a local celebrity as a result. I mean, Dazed and Confused was obviously, before he was even the rom-com guy. Dazed and Confused is just so iconic because there's the Moon Tower and there's so many spots in Austin that was filmed in. But just feeling like he kind of felt like Austin, he was uniquely one of ours, is how you felt about Matthew McConaughey. And I think a lot of us appreciate that he didn't go all Hollywood on us and he returned to his Texas roots.
Well, also, so when I bring up the he played bongos, he was naked playing bongos, and I think the police were called to his house, and he was making too much racket. Like, he thought, like you know, this is my house. Like, what's the big deal? I'm naked playing bongos here. Like, you guys got the problem, not me. I'm not driving.
There's an argument to be had there, Dan, to be fair.
you know, the more that he talked to me about it, Jane, I'm like, yeah, you're right. You're naked playing bongos. And yeah, you know, police never should have come over there. Neighbors never should have complained. Good luck today with the fallout from this. Certainly stirred things up a little bit, and that burner, front burner, got turned up a little bit. But thanks for joining us as always, and great work there.
Always a pleasure, Dan. Thanks for having me on.
That's Jane Slater, NFL Network reporter. You can see her on NFL Now today at 1 Eastern. Thursday Night Football continues this week with the Giants and the Eagles on Fox, NFL Network, Amazon Prime. Got some phone calls. We'll check in with the Dodgers, the World Series last night. Jessica Mendoza made history. I think the first woman to call the World Series broadcast. Is that right, Tom?
That is correct.
All right. So she'll join us on loan from the mothership, get her thoughts on what we saw last night. We'll also check in with the Miami Dolphins coming up in about an hour from now, their decision to go with Tua. I've seen a couple of tweets here, McLovin. And I don't know if this is a lot. I don't know if anybody's reporting this. But since the Dolphins own the Texans' first-round pick, they're playing Tua because they need to know if they're going to use Houston's potentially high draft pick to take a quarterback. Like, this is an audition for Tua.
So he could become like a Josh Rosen losing his job to Kyler Murray, potentially. Feels soon, right?
Yeah. Like, real soon.
Unless they get number one, and then it's goodbye to hello,
Dolphins,
Trevor.
The Dolphins aren't getting the number one pick.
The Texans.
The Texans.
Yeah.
I don't think the Texans are going to get the number one pick.
I mean, they should have beaten the Titans.
Now, if you're saying the Dolphins take their pick and the Texans pick, and then they tried to get Trevor Lawrence, then, all right, I'd at least listen to it. But, boy, that's one of those way, way down the road that you'd bring this up. Like week 12 or something. Yeah, McLovin.
The hype on Trevor, though, is so crazy. I saw some tweets yesterday that the Bengals have to send a scout out to Clemson. As well as Joe Burrow's played, he's so once in a generation. After they blew out Georgia Tech, everyone's like, well, there's not a single team that should not draft him if they get number one. I don't buy it, but that's what fans on Twitter say.
Wait a minute. The Bengals, if they had the worst record and the number one pick overall, they would take Trevor Lawrence and then trade Joe Burrow?
No, fans are saying, yeah, I mean, fans are like, listen, Burrow looks good, but you can't pass on Trevor. That's how good people think Trevor are. I'm not sure that's... I don't think the Bengals
are. Is he that much better than Joe Burrow? That's what I would want to know. And what could I get for that number one pick?
Because I don't think it really... They can't, though. You can't commit the number one overall pick and then let go of him, can you? From an optic standpoint.
I wouldn't. I would stay with Joe Burrow. Yes, Paulie.
Yeah, reading all the draft sites, everyone says it's the biggest sure thing for the number one pick since Andrew Luck, where there is no question who is going one. But you know what's going to happen here? Prediction of the year. In spring, somebody is going to say blank should be taken over Trevor Lawrence.
No, Herbstreet did. Herbie was with us.
He said he should be looked at right there with him, I think.
He said he would take Justin Fields over Trevor Lawrence on our show. And that's the first person I've heard say that. And Herbie's sons go to Clemson. They're on the football team. And that's what shocked me. Now, Justin Fields plays at Herbie's alma mater, Ohio State.
A tough position.
Yeah, and I think that maybe that's why he's saying that. Well, I don't know. Maybe he truly believes that. Also, remember I brought up Matt Ryan and would a team trade for him? And that was 2 weeks ago, I think I brought it up. Now you're starting to hear our team's interested in trading for Matt Ryan or Julio Jones. Coming up in a little bit, I have the perfect place for Matt Ryan to end up. And we'll play a game. I'll let the Danettes try to figure out the perfect team for Matt Ryan to be traded to. Now, I don't know about salary cap. I'm never good with math. And Julio Jones, if I'm one team, I go all in on Julio Jones. I'll tell you who that team is as well. 21 after the hour, we'll talk some baseball with Jessica Mendoza, the mothership, right after this on the Dan Patrick Show. Thanks for listening to the Dan Patrick Show podcast. Be sure to catch us live every weekday morning, 9 to noon Eastern or 6 to 9 Pacific on Fox Sports Radio. Find your local station for the Dan Patrick Show at foxsportsradio.com or stream us live every day on the iHeartRadio app by searching FSR or stream us live on the Peacock app. This award-nominated program, since we don't win awards, we just get nominated for them. Brought to you by Mercedes-AMG. Do you suffer from lead foot? Do goosebumps appear for no reason? Stop living with uninspired performance, Todd. Visit mbusa.com/AMG and find out if a Mercedes-AMG coupe, sedan, or SUV is right for you. Mercedes-AMG, driving performance. Had a little history made last night, by the way. So I'm told. Jessica Mendoza, the ESPN baseball analyst, part of the broadcast team for the World Series on ESPN Radio, and they'll be on the call tonight at 7:30 Eastern. And last night, she made history, becoming the first female to serve as an analyst for a World Series game on any platform nationally. She's alongside Dan Shulman and Chris Singleton. Jessica, good morning. If I told you 20 years ago you would be doing this in the World Series, you would have said what?
That's a great question. I mean, I wouldn't have believed it just because, I was just trying to make it as a softball player. Like, I wouldn't have believed I would have gone to the Olympics. Like, honestly, I think I was just trying to figure out life at that point. But I think more importantly, Dan, like, you just weren't hearing women, right? I watched a ton of sports like we all did growing up, and women's voices, let alone women's sports, but hearing women on male events, it didn't happen. I definitely never heard it. And as much as I loved listening to all the guys that I grew up listening to, it just wasn't even on your radar.
And when you hear that voice and you don't know what impact you've had on somebody, but maybe 15 years from now, you're going to find out when somebody walks up to you and says, I listened to you on radio. And because of that, I decided to do this. Like you're going to mean something to a lot of people, but you're going to mean something to some girls, some women who are listening to this, and you may never know. So it may not be impactful as much to people now, but it's going to be impactful, I think, down the road. So congratulations on that. And I hope you savor the moment.
I think one of the biggest things that I've learned is, yes, the impact on young girls, but really like what I've heard back from just even doing television is dads. Like a lot of fathers that are out there that, they've watched sports and they've got daughters, but they never really made that transition in their mind of like, can my daughter do this? And I've heard from more fathers that were like, when I first heard you, I didn't like it. Like, I was like, what is this?
Well, guys don't want to be told about sports by a woman.
Totally. Like, and were honest with me. But then they're like, all of a sudden, my little 6-year-old plopped down on the couch next to me and was like, is that a girl, daddy? is that a girl? And just perspective changed of like, oh, wait, like this can impact the people that I love and care about. And that to me, like, yes, the girls, the women, of course, that's the obvious. But there's a lot of men out there that I feel like that's just as important too.
That's great. But do you feel like you have to prove yourself every game?
Oh, yeah. I mean, like, and it's not even like proving it for me. Like I feel like my prep, like, you know, I know that I've got this, but there is definitely, and I felt it yesterday, to be honest with you, is like, I started to feel those nerves of like, don't screw up. Like, you have zero room for error, because this door has been open and we're coming through, but like, we don't want that door to ever close again. And there's a responsibility there. Like, if I mess up, like, that door could get shut and be like, okay, we're not going to have women doing World Series games anymore.
How would a great hitter, let's say Mookie Betts is at the plate against the best softball pitcher, how would Mookie do?
I think Mookie would take a lot of pitches, foul off a bunch, and find like scrappy way. He's not getting a home run. And in fact, he's not going to slug against the softball pitcher.
No.
But like, he'll grind. And I feel like he'd get like a key walk. Like, he'd lay off the rise ball after trying to swing at it and then kind of looking like, okay, I have no chance on hitting that. So I'm going to take that pitch. And he'd learn within the at bat. You'd literally see him change within an at bat to figure out a way to get on base, knowing, like, I'm not going to crush any of these pitches.
I'm glad that America is seeing Mookie Betts. Like, even when he was with Boston, you would think that, you know, the rest of the baseball world would notice this, or the casual fan, but he still is. We talk about Mike Trout as a five-tool player. Like, Mookie Betts, to me, like, he would back up first base on a throw from the pitch. Like, just small little things that we notice playing the game. And I just love that we're focusing on defense. He had the audacity to steal a base, two bases last night, Jessica. Doesn't he know about the analytics? You're not supposed to steal bases. Like, what's wrong with Mookie Betts?
He was like the first player since Babe Ruth. 19. I mean, that tells you where the game has been. No, you don't even see a stolen base, let alone two. And by the way, he pretty much stole home. Like, the high home view of him getting that jump on the weak ground ball, like, he was gone. It was like a squeeze play.
Yeah.
He was all in. He read the swing before there was even contact made.
What did we learn about the Dodgers last night?
I mean, we saw, I think Clayton Kershaw leads that with like him not coming back in the seventh. I think we saw an evolution of Dave Roberts and seeing that Clayton Kershaw had his stuff. He had a great start. It's game one. I think last 5 years, Clayton Kershaw runs out there in the seventh, maybe the eighth. And at some point he gets hit, and we're talking 3-4 runs. The Rays are in this game. Clayton Kershaw's narrative continues. Instead, you saw the frustration of the dugout. He wanted, I mean, 78 pitches. Like, yeah, he could have gone back out there, but the understanding of like, we've got a rested bullpen. We've got guys behind him. When he struggles in the postseason, it's when he's left in too long. So I think, to me, that's first and foremost what you learn the most about the Dodgers, is they are learning and evolving from the mistakes they've made in the past.
So what do you expect to happen tonight in this chess match between these two?
Well, I mean, the Dodgers have to go to a bullpen game, and this is the difference of the ALCS ending a day earlier, is that they were able to line up their guys. Now, Blake Snell, 2018 Cy Young Award winner, like, he's got the stuff, but oh, damn, like, oh my gosh, like, watching him struggle through like 100+ pitches his last two starts in like 3 1/3 innings.
No.
I mean, buckle up, fans. Like, this is not the best of baseball when you'll watch, especially combined with the Dodgers offense, like, not because they're explosive, which they are, but they're patient. And Blake Snell doesn't throw a lot of strikes. He gets you to try and chase. And you're going to see ball one, ball two, ball three, maybe some foul pitches. It's going to be a long, and he's going to literally just try to get them to chase. And for the Dodgers on the flip side, I mean, it's a bullpen game, but they're going to have to use a lot of their guys, I think, to mix and match, because that's what the Rays do. I mean, they go left, right, and they're going to try to play that chess match.
And I don't know. It's hard to go in as a favorite. You know, when you play, like, you're supposed to win. The Dodgers are supposed to win. And, you know, people will probably criticize them if they win in 6 games. Like, you guys should win in 5 or 4, whatever it is. And Kershaw goes out to the mound. Like, he's always expected to win. I don't know what that feels like, because I was never a favorite. But can you sense it with the Dodgers that They're prohibitive favors. They're supposed to win. They spend all this money. Tampa Bay, they spend like, you know, 58 cents on their roster. I don't know how hard it is to play and then play with that pressure on top of you.
Yeah, I sensed it the most in that Braves series in the NLCS, them losing those first two games. They weren't enjoying themselves. And I mean, Dan, like I played Team ESA, like the only thing to win was gold, like literally a silver medal was a failure. Like I know pressure. I understand it and I recognize it. And the Dodgers have had it for years now, but let's like be real. It's as high as it's ever been this year because it's not the Yankees on the other side. It's not this big, huge powerhouse, what everyone talked about coming into the season. And Tampa Bay, I mean, let's give them credit. They have the best record in the American League, but the Dodgers, all eyes are on them. If they do not win this World Series, they are a failed team. Tampa Bay, yes, they want to win it all, but the fact that they've gotten here and what they've been able to do to get here, beating the Yankees, beating the Astros, the most hated team in baseball, like they've already won. The Dodgers have to win it all.
If you're Clayton Kershaw and you could choose that the Dodgers sweep the Rays and you don't pitch again in the series, or you start game five and you're leading 3-1, which one would Clayton Kershaw take?
Oh, game five. Oh, I mean, this is part of his, not demise, I don't want to say that, but like knowing you could have a championship. I mean, he would want that championship. He is a team player, but like he also wants the ball. I mean, in game seven on Sunday, he was in the bullpen. He was like, put me in. I mean, he still has that, like, give me the ball. I want to help. The difference is, Dan, this year, it's not about him, like, which is a great thing. It's not all Clayton Kershaw on his shoulders. If he doesn't win his games, they don't win. Like there is the Mookie Betts, the Walker Buehlers. I mean, there's so much talent now more than ever that it really isn't about him. And he doesn't have to take the ball or get the ball.
I brought this up prior to the start of the show. And my guys, the Danettes, looked at me like I was crazy. Do you think one day we'll see a team adopt like Whitey Herzog's Cardinals approach where We're going to run. We're going to get on base. We're going to have great defense. We're going to run down everything in the outfield. We're going to take the extra base. Like, instead of what it is now, is somebody going to be, are they going to counter program baseball like teams are trying to counter program the Golden State Warriors?
I don't see it. I would love to see it. I mean, you have to have that in your team, I think, to win a championship. You have to have the ability to play defense, to get on base, just put the ball in play. I mean, Will Smith had a hit, you know, I think it was game seven, where he literally just jammed himself and went the opposite way to beat the shift. Like such like old school.
Nobody awesome. Does that. No, they won't even take a bunt. They won't. I don't understand it. I don't understand. I'm too old, Jessica.
No, and Dan, I'm with you. I just, the games that are won are won by the long ball. The numbers show it. And so more teams are going to go after guys. And I know this is like cringing, like, and I get it. The strikeouts are at all time high, but teams win based on the amount of home runs they hit. If you out homer the other team, you win the game. That's like basically what it's, so you don't see guys stealing bases. You don't see like the emphasis on just pure defense. And I'm with you. I mean, I love long balls. Of course you want that, but you have to have a combination. So I would like to see, I think the perfect team has the understanding that you need both, but you see more GMs go after guys that strike out, can't really move, but they can hit home runs.
But do you think the pitching approach will change, that everybody throws 100 now? So it's a novelty if you don't throw 100. Can you see where you're going to have guys who work the corners, who, you know, off speed stuff instead of my power versus your power?
I think you'll see those guys, but they'll be out of the bullpen more as specialists. I mean, to see them in a starter is more rare, like the Dallas Keuchels that, yeah, you know, just break an 80, like bottom of the zone, hit your corners. Kenta Maeda had a really good year for the Minnesota Twins. He was a Dodger, but look at when he was with the Dodgers. He was out of the bullpen. I mean, they didn't even use him as a starter. He's the ace for the Minnesota Twins because they understand the value in that. But I think what we see now is the guys that either because they drop down or they're able to just hit their spots, locate, they're not striking guys out, but they're getting that weak contact. Those are guys that just, honestly, the analytics don't show they can go two times through the lineup. So you only see them in the seventh inning.
Have fun tonight, and congrats. Please tell Dan Shulman I said hello. One of the great people, not only great broadcasters, but please tell Dan I said hello.
It's been awesome to do these games with him and reunite. Dan, thank you so much.
Thank you, Jessica. Jessica Mendoza will be on the call ESPN Radio tonight. That's at 7:30 Eastern. And I think it's great when dads come up and say something to her. Because we're tough. You know, guys, you know, and you'll hear this. Guys will say, oh, I don't want a woman telling me. And I always say, look, the people I worked with at ESPN, Andrea Kramer, Susie Kolber, Linda Cohn, like, they knew as much, if not more, than we did. And it was never one of those where, you know, you felt like they weren't doing their homework or you somehow knew. You know, we were just, guys are territorial with that stuff. But when you're around, you know, these other broadcasters who put in the same time and effort and knowledge, you know, that's where, you know, you have great confidence when you're with them, when you're anchoring with them. Or Andrea Kramer's hardest worker I've ever been around. Like, she was tireless, but she, you know, she brought it every time. Linda Cohn, you know, took great pride in her abilities as well, and rightfully so. And Susie Kolber's still doing it to a high degree on Monday Night Countdown. All right, let me take a break here, and phone calls coming up, update the poll results, and we'll check in with the Dolphins coming up. This is The Dan Patrick Show. Thanks for listening to The Dan Patrick Show podcast. Be sure to catch us live every weekday morning, 9 until noon Eastern, 6 to 9 Pacific on Fox Sports Radio, and you can find us on the iHeartRadio app at FSR, or stream us live on the Peacock app. Which band has the worst lyrics?
Well, wait a second.
Question?
Yeah. Which band has the worst lyrics to their songs? Because it might be a toss-up between Rush and Led Zeppelin. And you know I love Led Zeppelin, but I'm not into Tolkien and The Hobbit and all that nonsense with Robert Plant and Jimmy Page. Yeah, see.
I just don't know how many times Rush needs to start a song. Starts with 15 different guitar riffs.
Does anybody else have bad lyrics? That's what I'm
that
curious.
That was Spirit of the Radio, one of the great songs of all.
Well, they have one or two great songs. But
holy crap.
I don't think their lyrics are great. Today's Tom Sawyer, he gets high on you. The space he invades. Yeah, but that's they cover up the bad lyrics with great music.
Neil Peart wrote every word. He's kind of meta, weird, goofy. I never knew what they're talking about.
Zeppelin's music was great. The lyrics were not great. I don't know if there's another band that people bring up and go, boy, bad lyrics. Yes, McLovin.
I think the Who's Who Are You, the fact that their name is the Who, they get a little chided for bad lyrics.
Really?
Who Are You? They had a run of kind of cheesy lyrics.
Yeah, but they gave us Pinball Wizard. Deaf, dumb, and blind kid sure plays a mean pinball.
I'm sorry, that's an example of good lyrics?
Yes!
Oh.
Seton hates those lyrics.
No, he hates the Who.
Correct.
Yes.
Except for Bob O'Reilly.
Yeah. I'm surprised you didn't call it. Yeah, I love Teenage Wasteland.
Well, how are the Beatles lyrics?
People always say that.
And Squeezebox.
Yeah. Mama's got a Squeezebox.
Beatle lyrics are great. Is that I don't know what their strength was, the music or the lyrics.
Well, their time, you know, Octopus's Garden. Rocky Raccoon. It's like when you have a great voice and people say you could read the phone book and people would be entertained. And, you know, the Beatles, it felt like, hey, let's see if we can make the dumbest song ever and see if people think it's great. How about we do Octopus's Garden in the Shade? Yeah. Rocky Raccoon. Yes, McLovin.
That's the same for Rush and Led Zeppelin. Like, it didn't matter. It doesn't matter what the lyrics are,
but
right?
But the Beatles then did have great lyrics. They were great songwriters. They had great music, but they had great lyrics. Yes, boy.
I've said this a bunch of times, but I've been listening to a lot of Tom Petty the past 5 years, and he's a storyteller. And the songs, the words of Tom Petty's songs are important. The music doesn't stand alone. The words are really part of it.
I'm learning to fly, but I ain't got wings. Coming down is the hardest thing. Yes, McLovin.
I had no idea that Paul was into Tom Petty. It's only brought up about 13 times a day.
I know, I know. I've done a deep dive.
You would have thought Paulie just discovered Tom Petty.
I always liked Tom Petty and the Heartbreakers, but I've been listening to the Tom Petty channel for about 3 years.
Oh, straight. I know. No, we know.
It's fantastic.
I know.
You know, he would have been 70 years old yesterday, Tom Petty. What a crime.
Paulie comes in and he goes, I think George Strait did a Tom Petty song. And I go, okay.
She Wrecked Me by George Strait. Yeah. George Strait and Tom Petty, you can't get a...
I know. Okay. All right.
I'm sorry. I'm excited.
Yes, Todd.
Tom Petty, didn't they have the March Madness song a few years back? Running down a dream, it ain't coming after me. They like March Madness like was all in on that a few years
ago.
Oh,
really? I don't remember that.
And then they played...
Thank you, Todd. Jesse in Los Angeles. Hey, Jess, what's on your mind today?
Hey, Defeat.
Hey.
Hey, good morning to you and the boys. Last night, I was excited to see Kershaw dealing, but watching the game, I couldn't help but think of you because Joe Buck laid down two stats of the day regarding base running and further demonstrate, like you say, when baseball is more exciting when there's movement on the bases.
Yeah.
So obviously caught one of them, but Seton, if it's okay, I'll take the Guar stat of the day music anyway.
Oh, we got a little stat of the day. You got
stat of the day. Stat of the day.
Guar.
Stat of the day. Stat of the day.
Last night, Mookie Betts became the first player since Mr. I Skipped Leg Day, Babe Ruth, to have stolen two stolen bases and a home run in a World Series game. And the Dodgers were the first team to have three stolen bases in a World Series game since the 1912 New York Giants.
Oh! Hit the post. Well done, Jesse. By the way, the band is Josta. Guar did Wheel of Punishment.
Right, right, right.
We haven't done Wheel of Punishment in a while, but I loved the song that Guar gave us. Are you searching for Wheel of Punishment right now?
Yeah.
Okay. Vamp a little bit.
I don't even have it up anymore. That's how little we use it. Sad.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, that was great.
And just the fact that that song made it, they actually released it, but only in like Italy or something like that, or Germany or something. So if you bought the vinyl record of this Guar album or whatever one, I forget which one it was at the time, and you bought it in somewhere in Europe, it had the Wheel of Punishment song on it.
Lucy in California. Hi, Lucy.
Well, hi, Dan. How are you?
Great. Great. What's on your mind?
Well, we're a little disappointed out here that the games aren't in California, so I have a little song for you.
Oh, okay.
Okay, are you ready?
Yeah.
All right, here we go. We can't go to the ball game. Our team's not even in town. We bought ourselves peanuts and Cracker Jacks, so we'll sit on our couch with a beer and kick back. We'll still root for the Dodgers, because cardboard fans aren't the same. So let's hope we shut the Rays out at tonight's ball game. There you go.
Thank you, Lucy. Well done. Thank you for calling in.
Yeah.
What did you think, Todd?
I thought that was excellent.
Okay. And no, I'm not asking you to come up with a song.
I think that's T-shirt worthy, though. I think we should send her some. I thought that was very creative and well done.
Why don't we take it out of your budget?
Whatever you got to do. She deserves something.
Ready? The Washington football team continues to try to fool us, don't you, Daniel Snyder? I have that story for you coming up. And are the Dolphins making the right move going to Tua? That's coming up as well.